It's another QUTV Hawk Talk podcast. I'm your humble host, Shane Holsey. Alex Aubuchon here in the studio with me. Will Connerly will be joining us on the phone here in a bit. Alex, how's things going?
Oh, not too bad, Shane. Just another day in paradise here at Quincy University.
Oh, you know the deal. Will, how's it going?
It's going well. It's good to be joining you guys from my house on the call.
All righty. Well, thank you for joining us, a three-man crew here today. Wyatt is out this afternoon, but plenty to get to on today's show. We got some QU sports news to talk about, some NBA finals, some NFL. Let's get things started. The GLVC, the Great Lakes Valley Conference, has announced there will be basketball in 2020-2021 starting November 27th, a 22-game season. Men's and women's basketball will be played in the GLVC this year, and of course that includes Quincy University. The GLVC will be separated into 3 5-team divisions this year, an East division with Indiana, Springfield, Indianapolis, Lewis, McKendree, and Southern Indiana, a West with Drury, Missouri, S&T, Rockhurst, Southwest Baptist, and William Jewell, then a Central division with Quincy, Lindenwood, Maryville, Umsl, and Truman State. 11 home games, 11 away games for all 15 of those teams, and each team will play its divisional opponents twice, both home and away, and they will also play every other non-divisional opponent twice. And the championship tournaments will be March 4th through the 7th. That site is still to be determined, of course, following the point rating system of the last few years. So, Will, when you hear that basketball will be back in the GLVC, what are your thoughts?
My first thought is excitement. I'm very, very excited to see. It's going to be competitive. It really is going to be competitive. Everybody's chomping at the bit to get back out and play basketball. And so for me personally, it's just excitement to see, especially when you look at both of the men's and women's basketball programs here and a lot of the players that both programs are bringing back. I think that they can be very strong. And now when we look at both sides, I mean, that's my initial reaction is let's go. I mean, I was hyped. I mean, to be completely honest with you.
So let's take you through some notable dates for both the men's and women's teams. So of course, the first game will be November 27th. Both the men and the women will head to Springfield to take on UIS, and they'll actually start with 3 straight road games, so not an easy start. They'll go to Illinois Springfield November 27th, and then 2 days later on a Sunday, head to Romeoville to take on Lewis, and then another tough trip down to St. Louis to take on Umsl, and then the first home game, December 5th against Lindenwood, brand new GLVC opponent as of last year. Will, when you hear December 5th, of course, that's over our winter break, so maybe fewer students in attendance. If there will be fans, we're not sure on that front just yet. But having the season start November 27th and then go all the way through, 22 games through February 27th, so exactly 3 months. And then the first game when students hopefully will be back on campus is January 6th. That's a Wednesday against USI. So the first, let's count here, 3, 6, 7, the first 7 games will be played essentially with no students on campus. What are your thoughts there?
Well, the press release from the GLVC, they stated a lot of things you stated about basketball being back, but the one question mark that I had was, they said essential personnel only permitted and fans wouldn't be allowed in attendance. And that, I don't know if they're going to have a motion moving forward. If they got the schedule out and then they want to revisit that, hey, would it be appropriate to allow some family members from some of these student athletes? Hey, would it be appropriate? All these kids are already on campus. Would it be appropriate to allow them there? I don't know where the line is. I don't know where to draw the line. I'm not the one that's supposed to draw the line, but I don't know where it is. I don't know where they're gonna say and where they're gonna stop. I know that some outdoor sports on campus have allowed like students and people to go. But for this one, Shane, I don't know what's going to happen because it said essential personnel only. And if you're a basketball player and you have five players on the court, but is the sixth man essential? I mean, some people would say yes, but who knows? It's one of the more important things in an atmosphere in basketball. So I hope they can do it if they can do it in a safe way. But as of now, I think there's just no fans allowed and just essential personnel, as it was noted in the press release. And my reaction to that is just it's interesting because it would be much different, but they could potentially revisit that as well.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point there with the difference between indoor and outdoor sports. Of course, it seems like you look at college football and even the NAIA is playing some fall sports with some spectators in attendance. I know some NAIA schools are only allowing, say, home fans, no visiting fans are allowed. Of course, a limited number. And I think once the season gets underway and we start to get a feel for how things are going, I think then we'll have a better idea of where we'll be at the end of the season once the season gets rolling.
Absolutely. I think the first step was to get the schedule out. I mean, to know that games are going to be played, and that's exciting I know Alex would go to a lot of the games last year as well. And I mean, when you look at the men's and women's teams, they both are bringing a lot of players back. And you look at the men's team last year, they played really well at home. I wonder how teams are going to play at home. I wonder if that will have an effect on their performance. I mean, Quincy was one of the best teams in the conference at home, and the GLBC, a great conference, but I think they had 12 wins at home.
12-3.
They played really well. And I think that, who knows? I know they've got a lot of new faces on that team. But I think that one thing that the schedule that I did want to unpack too is that there's 14 new faces on the men's basketball team. And you're not playing non-conference schedule. A lot of times during the non-conference schedule, that's when you can kind of throw a ton of things on the wall and see what sticks, right? And you can kind of form your lineup and your rotation and see who can sit down on defense and get some stops and who can make the shots and who's going to get the playing time. Well, you're not going to have that now. It's right into conference play. Yeah, they'll get some intra-squads in or maybe some scrimmages from other schools. I don't know, but it seems like they're just going right into the 22 games, and that's going to be tough for a team who doesn't return all their personnel. You know, they return their top scorer, Stuckman, but same with the women's side. They return one of their top scoring options and they get Spagnuolo back. So it'll be fun to see for sure.
And not to mention your first three games are on the road. So you talk about the home court advantage, if you will. Alex, you can jump in here if you want as well. With no fans in attendance, is it kind of it's a competitive game. It means something in terms of scheduling and standings and all that, but does it, I can't speak from experience, but I'm sure it has to feel almost like one of those inner squads where you're just getting together, say the two teams, say in the NFL, you see those inner squad practices and those scrimmages and all that all the time. I feel like it's almost got to feel like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the same. You know, it's just it's a quiet gym. There's absolutely no atmosphere going on there if you don't have any fans. So, I mean, besides, you know, looking down at the floor and seeing where you're playing, can you really tell if it's a home or away game? Because there's nobody there cheering for anybody. It's just you against them. And it doesn't feel like it used to. And, I mean, obviously, you know, we've been saying for a while now, new normal and all that. Things may not be the way that they used to be for quite some time. But just, you know, I've been to at our baseball games outdoors. We allow fans, obviously social distance. And I went to a soccer scrimmage yesterday. There were fans there. So, I mean, you know, things change. Who knows? And I think that the farther along we get into the season, you might see some fans start to trickle into Pepsi Arena.
And you wonder once we flip the calendar to 2021, maybe if some of those things will change, they'll start to rethink some things. Will, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think they're definitely, I mean, like I mentioned before, I think they're going to revisit it. They say no spectators now, but I think that they just want to kind of unpack. I don't know what they're thinking, but I think that this is something that they ought to revisit, and I think they will, just because of the fact that if they do or don't, I think that it wouldn't look good if they weren't to at least try, to at least see how they could do it in a way that is effective for the conference, effective for the fans and the students and the players who, I mean, in basketball, it's paramount. I mean, you talk about the sixth man, you talk about the way that the team played on the at home compared to the road. That's not just Quincy. I mean, it was Quincy last year, but a lot of teams in the conference have that drastic effect, and that's why the GLVC, when they went to the point rating system, they award you more points for getting a win on the road. And I think it will be easier to play on the road, but that's just the atmosphere. I mean, I talked to basketball players like after this came out, former basketball players at other schools too, and like, hey, like the atmosphere can't be replicated. Like it's tough. It's tough, and that's why they can play better at home, because of just that atmosphere and that vibe. And so I think they'll revisit it, but again, I'm really excited just to see basketball back and to see what both programs can do, because I think that that's what we're looking forward to, just as a student body, as a university, is to be able to hold some competition with spectators or not, just to be able to see and represent the school in the best way possible, because you know, you've been fighting for this moment ever since student athletes had a big heartbreak back in March when they couldn't finish their seasons, and it continued to prevail to this fall when a lot of students didn't enjoy that competition. But hopefully they can this winter, and it looks like they will with the release of the schedule.
Exciting times. And you mentioned the no non-conference games, and a lot of, we saw last year, those were some of the most fun games. Remember the triple overtime game that the men had last year? It's fun to go out and play some teams that you wouldn't normally play against. I mean, you play teams in your conference. It's, I remember the same thing in high school. Like, it was cool getting to go 2, 3, 4 hours away and getting to play somebody that you don't really get to play all that much. Say, go to Florida or somewhere and play some other school down there. Like, it's a different kind of feeling. It's you mentioned it's a way to kind of try some things out and get some experience and get some teams that you wouldn't normally play against.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Because, and that's when, yeah, I agree 100%. You get to play against teams that are really good, and you get to actually see what your lineup's going to do, because you don't get that now, it seems like. But that's just an adjustment that people are going to have to make. And I think that if this year has shown us anything, it shows you know, the people who can make the adjustments, I'm just speaking specifically within sports right now, the people who can make those adjustments and do whatever it takes to win a title, to win something, are going to ultimately prevail. And so the odds can be stacked against you in many different ways. But, you know, we've seen that excellence come through, and I can't only help but bring up what happened last night in the NBA and talking about that type of excellence and talking about that type of an adjustment, and just the way that you can get around that and maneuver a lot of the barricades that are set in front of you. I think that's why I love watching people overcome things, and when they're not supposed to, when maybe the odds are stacked against them. And maybe that is, I mean, the winners in 2020, I think it really goes to show you who was, you know, doing all they could when maybe they didn't have to, or nobody was watching them. How did people come together, and how did their teammates, and how did they bring a bond together and gab unity within a time that, you know, is just trying to tear us apart right now? So I think that's what's going to be able to ultimately prevail, and that's going to be the difference maker within the GLVC, but just across sports in general, as we've seen.
So how about that for a segue? We'll get to that in a little bit. We'll take a short break, and we'll talk about some NBA finals, some NFL, some things going on around the country. So stick right with us, and we'll be right back. back on QUTV Hawk Talk, talking all things sports going on around Quincy University and around the country as well. And a new champion was crowned over the weekend. The Los Angeles Lakers are your NBA champions for the 17th time in franchise history, taking down the Heat in six games, 106-93. And really, last night, that game wasn't even that close. It was a 30-point game for the majority of the middle part of that game, and an absolutely dominating performance once again for the Lakers and LeBron James, and they are your NBA champions.
Yeah. You know, as Will alluded to the weeks before, it was theirs to lose. Who's going to stop them, especially after Milwaukee got knocked out? But, you know, I stopped watching that game last night after, like, the first half or even a little into the third quarter, because it wasn't much of a game. It just wasn't what I wanted to see. I wanted to see some fight, which, I mean, I understand that, you know, Game 5, Jimmy Butler, 40 points, all that huge fight out of the Heat. And I didn't even expect him to make it to 6. So, you know, I'm proud of him for that. But I was just hoping that they could provide a little more of a challenge. But, you know, when LeBron's in that title zone, he's out there putting in work.
Another triple-double, 28 points. And what do you know, the Lakers, as many people expected, maybe not quite as easy as some might have thought. Some people said Lakers in 4 or 5, like a certain person on this program, but the Heat did take it to 6 games. They stole a couple games from them, and ultimately, Will, LeBron has another championship.
He does. I like that shout out. I give him credit. I mean, and not only did they not win it in 4 or 5, but the Heat didn't get, not only did the Heat not win it, or they won a couple games, right? But they didn't have a couple starters as well. And that was even more impressive. And also, Jimmy Butler went off. That we haven't seen that. Him emerging in the finals, like that, going blow for blow with LeBron James. And they actually winning a couple games. And you're right. I thought it would have been 4 or 5, but give credit to the Heat. They came through. They lost a couple starters and still managed to take a couple games from a team that has two of the best players in the world, and they're going to be a force to reckon with still. I mean, LeBron, if people haven't understood, LeBron's still not going away. People think he's going to go away every year. I mean, tremendous job, honestly, to the NBA for being able to complete that season. But I think it's time, like he said in the post game, for him to get his respect. And it's your 17th year when you lead the league in assists. You win your fourth title with a third different team. Another Finals MVP too. I mean, when is he going to start getting his respect? I think he has it, and he's demanded it, and he's earned it. I think he's going to continue to have it. I mean, him and Anthony Davis, what you saw in that second quarter, I mean, that's the height of that duo. I mean, that duo is going to go down. It's an all-time great duo. So it's exciting, and I'm honestly excited to see, like, with the NBA doing that, I've really enjoyed watching it, to see what happens moving forward with other big powerhouse teams like the Nets potentially next year with Kevin Durant. And you also have the Golden State Warriors with a high draft pick and the Giannis sweepstakes. So I'm excited, and I'm really, really, really happy for LeBron, because he's someone that, you know, he's got a lot of criticism throughout his career, but you can't criticize 17 years being one of the most durable players ever. And it's hard to compare him to players in other eras, but what you can say is he has one of the greatest careers of all time. I'm not saying he could be the best player of all time, which a lot of people think he is. He may be, but you can say he's probably had one of the greatest careers of all time. 17 years, the only people in that category at that excellence is him and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And what is that? A couple Lakers. The Lakers just find a way to get those guys. You know, in the back they had West, and then they got Kareem, and then they kept moving forward, and they got Worthy, and then they got Kobe and Shaq, and they just continues to move forward. They continue to get these all-time great players, and that's why they won their 17th title, the most all-time, tied now with the Celtics.
And LeBron winning his another finals MVP. This was his third different team, of course, with the Cavs and the Heat and now the Lakers. And he just we've talked about this before. It's almost like a fine wine. He keeps almost just getting better with age.
He does. I mean, he's better now than he was. I mean, the way he can facilitate his teammates, I mean, it's incredible. And, I mean, he's playing with Anthony Davis, and he's still able to take off when he needs to. It's really fun to watch. And I kind of like the swagger he had out there last night, knee mugging out there, demanding his respect, and then going crazy because, you know, they're in that bubble. That was their last night in the bubble. Now they leave, and what that just euphoria that you have. You know, we were here. We sacrificed everything to win a title, and we did. You know, Anthony Davis, I told you when you come here, things will be different, and they were. I mean, to be able to keep those promises you make to yourself is so crucial, but the promises LeBron James has made have been so big, and his ability to execute on those, it's just been incredible. It's really cool to watch. I mean, in sports, when you see these superstars and when you see these people like, hey, we got to see these guys play. We see them on the baseball field all the time. We see them on all different types of greatness throughout sports. And that's one thing we've got to witness last night for anybody that got to watch the game or see the reaction from it.
And when the great ones always find a way to show out in the biggest moments, and LeBron with another triple-double, his 11th triple-double in the finals, and that was easily the most convincing win of this series. It was a 13-point game, but in all reality, it was a 25-30-point game. So it was utter domination. But on the other side, you have to be impressed with how the Miami Heat competed, especially being down Goran Dragic, being down Bam Adebayo for the middle part of this series, and finding a way to squeak out a couple games. And I'm telling you, Bam Adebayo might be the NBA's newest superstar. What do you think?
They've got a couple of them, don't they, guys? Like Bam Adebayo, you got Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, I mean, Jimmy Butler. They're good. And what if Giannis goes to the Heat? I mean, the Heat are a tremendous organization.
Hell yeah, the Heat are a tremendous organization. They have, you know, Spoelstra and Riley. They got a lot of winning history and success, and I mean, they just, even if they don't have the most talent, Jimmy Butler said it, man, there are some dogs on that team. There are some ballers on that team. They're going to work hard. They're going to outwork you is really what they're going to do. They may not be more talented than you, obviously. The Lakers, Heat, come on, man. Come on now. But they still stole two games. There's some fight. There's some tenacity. And those are some dogs down there in Southern Florida.
Will, any last thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, just to unpack that in final is, I agree with you on the Heat, and they're a model way to run an organization, and likewise the Lakers too. I mean, those are two that's one of the all time great just organizations and dynasties. And so it was cool to see them battling there, and it was cool to see the Heat's run. They overachieved. When anyone ever overachieves in anything, I think you tip your cap because you can never do better than what you're best. And I do honestly think they did their best with their circumstances. Nobody had them even getting out of the first round. Some people, I mean, and then they go sweep, sweep, and then they take down the, like, they're going crazy. And the fact that they even got to the finals, that's a big overachievement this year for the Heat. I mean, nobody was talking about the Heat. They were just an afterthought until they just kept winning and winning. And so it's cool to see people overachieve. That's all I got to say.
And to do it in a situation where, I mean, you're in a bubble, you're playing with no fans. I mean, you have virtual fans, of course, but there's nobody in the arena to cheer you on. You don't really have that true underdog, you know, mentality. You don't have, I mean, of course you're in the state that you play in, but you play in Miami. You don't play in Orlando. There's a big difference there. So to be able to put together a performance like that as a 5 seed to make it to the NBA Finals, and no matter the circumstances, home court advantage or not, that's impressive in and of itself. And let's shift gears a little bit, because I wanted to get to this before we wrap things up. Dak Prescott yesterday he's having surgery on his ankle. Did you guys see that injury in real time?
I didn't see it. I wasn't watching it live, but I have seen the aftermath of it. I did get to. How about you guys?
I only saw the replays of it. I did not get to watch it happen live either. But just one of those videos that when you think about it, just kind of makes your skin crawl a little bit. It makes you shiver. It's just, yeah. That's sports though.
Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of football too. You never know what can happen. It's an innocent looking play, and his ankle just gets rolled up on, and it just makes you want to turn away from the screen. I didn't see it. We had a couple games on yesterday, and one of my roommates pointed to the screen and said, "Watch this. I think Dak just really, really got hurt." And I looked at it, and they were showing the replay. And as soon as the Giants player landed on his ankle, I had to turn away. It was too much to watch. And then you see replays of it later on, and they have it like blurred out to where you can't see, because if you haven't seen it, I suggest you look it up. I'm not going to describe it in detail for you. You can try to find that yourself. But I mean, that's a scary reality of sports, and especially during this time, and it just reinforces the idea that you really never know what's going to happen any given day. And if you feel for a guy like Dak Prescott, because he was starting to really come into his own and become, I mean, he's the quarterback of probably the most famous franchise maybe in American sports history. He's a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. And to have something like that happen, and from what we've heard and everything that's happened to him, his brother committing suicide, losing his mother, and the contract, and everything that's going on with that, you have to feel for a guy like Dak.
Absolutely. Heart goes out to him. I mean, he really needs his support right now of all his loved ones, and I know a lot of people rallying around him. It's so sad to see, because he was putting together a good season too. And that's why it's so hard for players, superstars, to go out and play without guaranteed money. Because every Sunday you see people carted off the field. That's just the reality of the NFL. And so it's tough. Your heart goes out to him, especially Shane, as you mentioned, what he's gone through mentally with his family. It's awful. It's terrible. And watching that is definitely tough. I know, like you said, they block out the video for his privacy, and it's just hard to stomach that sometimes. And that's just a sad reality, is your season can end anytime. It's crazy, and it's so sobering just to see that.
Yeah, season, career, anything. Especially at the end of the day, you got to remember, this is football we're talking about. This is, you know, men throwing themselves into other men. And these aren't, you know, just regular men. These are big men. Mm-hmm. It's not the first time we've seen this. Unfortunately, it's certainly not going to be the last time we're going to see something like this. Mm-hmm. It's a part of football, but it's hard to watch.
And to hear, I mean, Jim Nantz and Tony Romo on the call. Tony Romo was, of course, the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys for a long time. I mean, they were speechless. I mean, you don't hear Tony Romo get speechless too much, and you could really tell he was shaken up, Will.
Yeah, you could. It was – nobody knew what to say. And I know, as, like, us three people have been on the call before, I think that, like, the only – when I'm calling a game, man, the only rule I have is when it pertains to an injury – just what you can do is whatever you do, don't assume that whatever happens, you know, just, and it's hard to, walk that line. But that was always my rule, is don't assume, wait till you get the facts, wait till the trainer comes. But nonetheless, I just want to throw that in there because I know I was reading an article about that and about, like, you know, the ethics of showing injuries and whatnot. And I didn't know if you guys had comments on that either, but it definitely was, it was crazy to see. And you know, Tony Romo, their hearts went out to him. And I think that's perfectly fine to showcase that emotion. That's what we want to see, because that's how we felt.
Of course, because you're talking about human beings and it, like, their health, their lives sometimes even coming into play, and you have a concern for them, Alex.
I mean, yeah, but it, I wonder, like, would you, as a fan, would you rather, if an injury occurs, do you want to hear them talk about it? Do you want to see videos of it? Or do you want it to be more tastefully handled where, you know, they don't show it as much and they just, you know, have more of a discussion about, you know, something else as opposed to, you know, just drawing attention to whatever injury that is?
I think it depends on the severity of the injury, of course. And with something like this, as soon as you see one clip of it, you know, like, you in real time, there's a slow motion replay is a blessing and a curse, because I mean, you see these close calls and you can make determinations, oh, this guy's toe was, you know, you can zoom in, you can do all this stuff. And then for something like this, and you see a replay of it in slow motion, it just looks 1,000 times worse than it possibly could have in real life, because I mean, it's football, it's a fast-paced game. Players are flying. There's 22 grown men on the field and flying around everywhere, and you don't really see it until you don't really see everything until you see the slow motion replay, and it's kind of a blessing and a curse. Will,
it is because it makes it worse, doesn't it? Because like in live time, it's terrible, but then when you go in and you zoom in close and then you go slow-mo, it hurts. It makes it worse, it feels like, to see. And yeah, it's different because obviously that hasn't always been adapted in the NFL. It's these newer technologies to get the better camera angles, showcase more things on the field, and a lot of things on the field, at least almost every game, somebody gets hurt. You know, so that's definitely tough. And I don't know where the ethical line is. I know that one of the journalism values that they talked about in that article that I was reading was minimize harm. How can you do that with the slow motion replay? Like, what can you do? And I don't know, because the nature of football is just a dangerous game. And, you know, you have risk every time you put on the pads, but it's obviously a scary, scary thing. And I agree 100% of what you say about the slow motion. It can help you. It can help you go down and see if a guy's foot was in bounds. It can also show you some things that you may rather not want to see in terms of an injury. So, you know, you kind of have a love-hate relationship with it. And I know some people that say, you know, it helps teams' results go the right way because they can go back and review the play. But there's a lot to unpack with that, and it feels like slow motion is now just such a big part of sports now in the 21st century with, okay, was he safe or out? Oh, let's go check. You know what I'm saying? So it's just such a thing that we're just kind of numb to it now. We always see slow-mo.
You said, I mean, we've harped on it. It's a great thing, but sometimes, let me backtrack here a little bit. It's always hard, I found. We've broadcasted plenty of games. We've never, thankfully, never had an injury of this magnitude happen during any games we've called. But when a player gets hurt, it's always because you don't really, when you prepare for the game and you look through all the, you know, trends and stats and everything, but you don't really prepare for the worst. I mean, that's, When a guy gets hurt, you kind of have to. It's almost you're broadcasting. You're human already, but you almost have to kind of look outside yourself a little bit and think, what if I was this player's brother or parent or whatever? What would they want me to say? It's almost like you have to put yourself in their shoes.
That's really the issue, is family members. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, it's like, this is someone's loved one. Like, how do you want to be, how do you want to be displayed on a national television?
Yeah. I mean, you just gotta, you got to think about it from different perspectives, like Shane said. You know, it's just, it's not just about, you know, drumming up interest and viewership and all that kind of stuff. It's about, you know, having the morality and understanding to do, I don't necessarily know if there's a right or wrong thing, but to do what's in the best interest of that athlete and, you know, their family. And just making sure that they're all right, because they don't want this. Obviously, they're just playing a sport and they're just taking a risk. And this is just what happened to them. They didn't want it to happen, and I'm sure it happened by chance. So there's really no point in like trying to make or take any negativity out of it. It's really just about what can you do to smooth over the situation and just get past it as quickly as possible.
And eventually you do have to move on. And eventually the Cowboys did end up winning that game. Andy Dalton came in, did a nice job and filled in for him. And as a backup, I can't imagine, as a backup quarterback, you go into the week preparing as if there's a chance that you may come into the game. But when a guy goes down like that, it snaps you to reality if you weren't already there. And it's kind of, I can't imagine, I'm, of course, again, not speaking from any experience, but I can't imagine seeing the quarterback in front of you go down like that and then going out there and having to finish the game by yourself and put yourself potentially in that same position. What do you think, Will?
Oh, I mean, it'd be extremely difficult, because I think that you have to be prepared, but best case scenario, you never play, right? Like, and how do you, like, as somebody that is a, that's just the mindset of a backup, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's, and I know, like, I can speak from experience too. Like, when you're someone who is not in the, and not the starter, not the person who, like, you only get an opportunity if somebody goes down, you don't want that person to go down. No way. What you want to do is do your best, you know, and keep your head down and do all the right things, and the good things will eventually come of it. And we've seen so many times in sports when a starter's gone down, a backup has been ready and has come in the game, and that has ultimately led to a great career. The most famous one I can think of is obviously with Tom Brady and Drew Bledsoe. But what I'm saying is, from the perspective of a backup, it's extremely hard, because best case scenario, you never play. But that's not what you prepare for. You hope for the best, but you prepare for the worst. And that's the same thing in baseball with the closer. Okay, best case scenario, the closer never pitches because we should be winning by enough, or our pitcher should go deep enough. But that's not the case. That's not reality, and you have to be prepared for reality or you're going to get screwed. And you have to be. The separation's in the preparation. If you don't prepare, you know, you're just preparing to fail. So that's why they did it, and that's why you have backup quarterbacks, and that's why you invest in backup quarterbacks, because, you know, half the quarterbacks in the league get banged up some odd or another every year. And so you have to have depth. That's what we talk about, strength and numbers and depth on rosters. But this, to a top five quarterback in all of the NFL, it's hard. It's hard to fathom. It really is, because of the season and because of what he's gone through too, and the unique structure of this season. So it's tough. It is. And I can't even describe how he must feel, because he's probably, everybody's heartbroken for Dak. I mean, that's a brotherhood when you're in a locker room like that.
Another I just want to leapfrog into this a little bit, maybe talk about something a little more uplifting, kind of on the same token, but instead of a player leaving due to an injury, how about Alex Smith coming back and playing in a game for the first time since 2018 for the Washington football team? Of course, he had to replace somebody who got injured. Unfortunately, that's the reality of football, and Alex Smith, unfortunately, knows that all too well after that gruesome leg injury. We'll talk about that part of the equation as little as possible back in 2018. And this gives you goosebumps. This is the old goosies. Alex Smith finally coming back, and he started the season as the third string quarterback there in Washington, and then Dwayne Haskins struggles and he gets benched and Kyle Allen's the new starter. And what do you know, the first game Alex Smith is the backup, he gets put right back into the game. And it's an emotional time for both him and his team.
Most definitely, yeah, it's an emotional time for him. I mean, how many, he's been out for what, 2 years, 21 months, something like that. He's had somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong, like 16, 17 surgeries.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, actually, take a second. How many surgeries would it take you before you're like, I'm good. My career's over. I'm going to hang it up.
Before I get to 16, let's just put it that
Most way. Definitely. So, I mean, goosebumps, whatever you want to call it, is an understatement for this guy. He fought so hard for this. And it really is a shame that, you know, you get to see him come in because of, you know, another injury, and injuries are just something that happens in football, and we've talked about that. But, you know, an injury-ridden guy gets to come back and play again because of an injury. It just seems like a cycle of injuries.
And I was watching some of the, you know, pregame leading up to that, and it was almost like watching Fox NFL Sunday, I believe it was Howie Long said, or Terry Bradshaw, one of the two said, I hope he never, like, gets into the game because, I mean, what if that happens again? It's almost like a little PTSD almost, to kind of draw a correlation there. Will, what are your thoughts on that?
It was incredible. The persistence. I mean, my thoughts specifically on him never getting in the game, I don't know. I mean, I hadn't thought about that specifically, but I do know that I'd encourage people to go watch the Alex Smith E60, to go see that. They didn't even know if he was ever going to even walk. They didn't even know if he was ever going to play again. They were not optimistic at all. I mean, this is kind of against all odds, the catastrophic injury that he had. Like, the surgeries, after never knowing if he's going to even be able to just operate normally as a human, to get in a National Football League game again, that's honestly, it was inspiring. It was for me. It was, I didn't even have the words to paint that picture because of the fact of how many times he had to go through setbacks just to get that opportunity again, even if it was as a backup when he's led his teams to great places before. It's crazy. I mean, it just speaks to his character and his persistence.
And he's seen his family there and getting a chance to watch him play, and on, just to make it a little more bittersweet, on his first pass is a completion, and the whole of what few fans were there and the sidelines from both teams were in applause. I mean, you can't help but applaud a guy like that, and to go what he's gone through. He broke his tibia and his fibula in his leg. I mean, to be able to just, I mean, it's incredible. It truly is.
Like Will said, to be playing professional football again after something like that. Like, I mean, we keep saying, you know, it's incredible, it's inspiring, but there's not words for it. It's just, it's crazy. It's insane. It's incredible. It's inspiring. It's just, it's Alex Smith. Wish him the best.
And he's one of the one of the best I've from at least what I'm heard, what I've heard, one of the nicest guys you'll ever get a chance to meet, one of the nicest guys in the league. And same goes for Dak Prescott. So thoughts and prayers go out to Dak, and congrats on Alex Smith for making it back. Now that's about all the time we have for Will. Any final thoughts before we call today?
Well, my final thoughts is when your guys' hearts are in the right place and continue to keep them there for a lot of the legends that we've lost in the sports world. It feels like if anybody that cares about baseball and baseball history, it's been a tough month. Mm. So it really has, a couple of Cardinal legends, a couple of just legends all across the league, even another one today, one of the greatest second basemen of all time. So just learning about these passings, it always happens. And when people live incredible lives like that, it's just inspiring to potentially live a life like that yourself one day. So just keep those people in your thoughts and prayers, and families and fans, people affected by that. Those are my final thoughts.
Alex?
Well, I don't have anything, you know, deep like that, but I'm really glad that you brought up, you know, the passing of Joe Morgan. And it really has been a tough 2020's been tough, fellas. It has not been an easy one. It just keeps hitting us with more and more stuff that's bringing us down. So I encourage everybody, be a little more like Alex Smith. If life keeps putting you down, just keep coming right back.
It's not whether you get knocked down, it's whether you get right back up. Wise words.
Amen.
Amen to that. Well, for Alex and Will, I'm Shane. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned next week for another episode of KU TV Hawk Talk. We'll talk to you then.